injured since the resumption of the genocide on March 18th. The overall death toll now tops 50,800, including 211 journalists, with nearly 115,700 others injured. UN Special Rapporteur Francesca Albanese has urged the international community to stop treating Israel as a normal state and recognize it as an apartheid regime committing war crimes and crimes against humanity. One continuation of the Israeli policy of using humanitarian supplies as a tool of war against the Palestinians in Gaza, the regime has also systematically crippled the ability of NGOs operating there. Aid groups are unable to cope with the immense pressure due to the catastrophic humanitarian conditions. Our correspondent Moti Abu Mosabe reports from Deir al-Bala.
Since the onset of the Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza Strip, it has become unambiguous that the Israeli regime uses the humanitarian needs as a tool to blackmail the Palestinian resistance on one hand and collectively punish the entire population on the other. It was not enough for the occupation forces to close Gaza crossings and prevent the flow of the humanitarian supplies. Neither was it enough to ruin all life sectors in Gaza. They proceeded vigorously to narrow the leeway of NGOs to operate.
Since the start of the genocidal war on Gaza, the Israeli regime has been targeting relief workers from international and local organizations deliberately. We have hundreds of those individuals, many of them foreigners, who were killed while helping the Palestinian people. This is a flagrant violation of all international and humanitarian laws, because those workers must be protected. We comprehend that the main aim of these systematic attacks is to deepen the suffering of the Palestinian people in light of the Israeli policy of using the humanitarian conditions as a method of war.
Considering that 2.2 million Palestinians in Gaza, 70% women and children, are utterly relying on those supplies and services provided by international and local NGOs, is enough to paint a tragic picture of the current situation in Gaza. Those organizations that were striving over the past months to secure some amounts of food items to the families torn apart in the displacement camps are no longer able to get even the minimum percentage of the life-saving materials.
The Israeli regime has been tightening its suffocating siege on Gaza by preventing the entry of the humanitarian needs, which not only plunges the people into catastrophic situations, but exposes the ability of humanitarian organizations to respond to the crises. Those organizations have been grappling with Israeli tactics used against them. Nowadays, zero trucks of goods, medical supplies, and fuel are allowed, which means that the organizations will shut their doors soon. The world needs to take decisive actions to stop these crimes against Gazans.
Since the resumption of the genocidal war on Gaza, a plethora of warnings and statements were unleashed by the NGOs, sounding the alarms of them being unable to function in Gaza due to Israeli attacks that claimed hundreds more lives in addition to the prevention of the basic supplies. Having 25 World Food Program-supported bakeries in Gaza shut down could be just the beginning of the absolute famine that will be a recipe of a death sentence for the entire population.
With every brutal measure taken against the Gaza Strip, the Israeli regime presents more poignant evidences that it has no red lines when it comes to shattering the lives of the Palestinian people, and it reflects in the abhorrent silence and inaction of the international community. Abu Musabbih, Deir al-Balah City, the central area of Gaza Strip.
A large group of pro-Palestine activists and non-governmental organizations have held a mass protest in the French capital, Paris. Protesters denounced Israel's genocidal war on the besieged Gaza Strip while expressing solidarity with the Palestinian people.
Every day we are demonstrating in Paris, women, men and children too, to expose this genocide and to say that nobody can silence us.
I just want the government to take a stand, to recognize the state of Palestine, and to stop welcoming a war criminal like Netanyahu in the country.
The French protesters strongly condemned Israel's attacks on hospitals, journalists, and aid workers. They also denounced hypocrisy of the Western states in dealing with the Gaza crisis. Participants criticized the French government's support for Israel, calling for an immediate end to Paris's cooperation With Tel Aviv, they carried banners and Palestinian flags while chanting slogans demanding the arrest of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Demonstrators vow to continue daily protests in various cities until the genocide in Gaza comes to an end. Pro-Palestine rally has also been held in the Iranian capital, Tehran, in solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza and in condemnation of the renewed Israeli attacks on the besieged territory. Hundreds of protesters took to the streets on Wednesday to slam Israel's breach of the ceasefire agreement with Hamas and the regime's continued massacre of children. Protesters reaffirmed their support for Gaza, waving Palestinian flags and holding pictures of assassinated resistance leaders. Iranians also chanted slogans condemning the U.S. for backing the ongoing genocide. Global pro-Palestine protests have been ongoing since the Israeli genocide began in Gaza in October of 2023. The rallies, however, have gained renewed momentum since March, when fresh strikes on Gaza violated a fragile ceasefire there. Breaking news of some comments coming from Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian. He has stated that Iran is not seeking a nuclear bomb. We are going to cover the comments of the Iranian president. There is more. He did say that we'll stand strong against any aggression, and the more they threaten, the stronger we will become. Latest comments coming from the Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian, so we're going to keep a close eye on those comments. Moving on with the news, though. The Yemeni army says it has carried out yet another operation against the U.S. military in response to its deadly aggression towards the Arab country.
Our air defenses were able to shoot down an American MQ-9 drone while it was carrying out hostile missions in the airspace of Al-Jaf Governorate using an appropriate, locally manufactured missile.
Saadi said that the operation was conducted after the U.S. launched multiple strikes on various areas of Yemen, resulting in deaths, injuries, and damage to people's properties. The attacks targeted several governorates and provinces, including Hodeidah, Dhamar, and Ibb. Saadi noted that this is the third drone the Air Defense Forces have successfully shot down in 10 days and the 18th since they began their operations in support of Gaza. He reiterated the Army's unwavering support for Gaza and its commitment to carrying out defensive missions to confront any aggression against Yemen. He emphasized that the Army is fully prepared to responsibly address any attempts to undermine Yemen's sovereignty, security, and stability. He noted that the operations will continue until the aggression against Gaza ceases and a blockade is lifted. Iran's foreign minister says the upcoming nuclear talks in Muscat will serve as a test to gauge Washington's seriousness in addressing long-standing tensions. Abbas Araghchi added that the tasks will be a new opportunity for diplomacy with the United States, which has a long history of unilateralism. Araghchi also added the focus of negotiations will be on fostering transparency and building trust regarding the peaceful nature of Iran's nuclear program in return for the lifting of U.S. sanctions. The remarks come as Tehran and Washington are set to hold indirect, high-level talks on Iran's nuclear program in Oman on Saturday. According to media reports, Araghchi will be heading the Iranian team in the meetings, and the U.S. will be represented by Trump's special envoy for the Middle East, Steve Witkoff. Iran has opened its largest and most sophisticated nuclear medicine center in the capital, Tehran. The center was opened ahead of the National Nuclear Technology Day, which is marked on Wednesday. The facility is equipped with advanced imaging systems that allow better treatment of medical conditions. Yusumish Ahmadi has visited the facility and sent us this report.
A beacon of hope for countless patients. Rasul Akram Hospital in Tehran now hosts Iran's largest and most advanced nuclear medicine center, officially opening its doors with a state-of-the-art department equipped with PET-CT and SPECT imaging systems.
We have opened this new nuclear medicine ward, spanning 600 square meters, which includes the latest PET and SPECT scanners. These advanced tools will significantly improve the diagnosis and treatment of medical conditions, particularly for cancer patients, as the center is now equipped with the most cutting-edge technology available globally.
This milestone marks a significant leap in Iran's medical capabilities, seamlessly combining cutting-edge technology with expert care to redefine diagnostic and therapeutic standards.
This new ward was essential for the hospital, As the first such center at Iran University of Medical Sciences, it will significantly contribute to early diagnosis and more effective treatment plans. The ability to visualize both function and anatomy simultaneously greatly enhances the precision of our work.
Meanwhile, with the PET and SPECT scanners in operation and specialists delivering care to patients, concerns about long waiting times have been effectively alleviated.
This cutting-edge technology not only enhances diagnostic precision, but also embodies a commitment to providing the highest quality healthcare to patients.
The opening comes just before Iran's National Nuclear Technology Day, reflecting the country's increasing reliance on nuclear advancements, particularly in healthcare. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
China slammed U.S. claims about jeopardizing the Panama Canal's operations, urging Washington to halt blackmail and plundering of Panama and other countries of the region. The remarks came after U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said during a visit to Panama that the United States will not allow China to threaten the Panama Canal's operations and integrity. In response, China's embassy in Panama refuted Hegseth's claim about interfering in the canal's operations. It stressed that China has never taken part in the management or operation of the Panama Canal, nor has it interfered in issues concerning the waterway. Describing Hegseth's comments as irresponsible, the embassy said the U.S. has orchestrated a campaign based on the China threat theory to undermine cooperation between China and Panama. It added that China has always respected Panama's sovereignty with regards to the canal. After Donald Trump took office as U.S. president, he vowed to take back the canal and counter what he called China's disproportionate influence over it. U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs on imports from dozens of countries have officially come into effect, intensifying fears of a global trade war. China, the hardest hit trading partner, now faces tariffs on its products reaching a staggering 104%. In response, Beijing has vowed countermeasures and denounced the U.S.'s move as unilateral bullying that violates international trade rules. China also announced additional 34% tariffs on all U.S. imports set to take effect on Thursday. The European Union is now subject to 20% tariffs alongside industry-specific duties. The latest wave of U.S. tariffs have also been imposed on Japan, South Korea, India, Taiwan, and Vietnam, marking a broad escalation in trade measures. U.S. stocks, the dollar, and crude oil prices have faced sharp declines as a result of the levies. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell by more than 300 points. The S&P 500 dropped nearly 80 points, ending below 5,000 for the first time in almost a year. NASDAQ plunged over 2%. The U.S. dollar saw its weakest performance in weeks. Meanwhile, crude oil prices also fell on the same day. As these tariffs come into force, their ripple effects on the global economy remain a growing concern. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has issued a stark warning about the potential fallout of escalating tariff policies, particularly for vulnerable economies.
Trade wars are extremely negative. Nobody wins with a trade war. Everybody tends to lose. And I'm particularly worried with the most vulnerable developing countries in which the impact will be more devastating. I sincerely hope that we will have no recession, because a recession will have dramatic consequences, especially for the poorest people in the world.
Guterres made the remarks at UN headquarters in New York on Tuesday. His remarks come at a crucial time as world leaders grapple with the risks of global economic instability, as Trump has imposed a war of tariffs even on the partners of the United States. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
radio for those who seek the truth.
In the limelight.
The March 17th Israeli regime airstrike on Palestinians shivering in their tents in Gaza left 460 dead and another 620 injured. The Zionists then followed these other genocidal attacks on March 20, murdering another 70 Palestinians. Such attacks are continuing as this report is being compiled. They did not even bother to offer a pretext for their latest crimes against defenseless Palestinian civilians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Crescent International wrote, in the first attack on March 17th, the Palestinians had woken up for suhoor, the pre-dawn meal in preparation for fasting, when the bombs hit them. Many people had little or no food, especially the children who had gone to sleep on an empty stomach and were killed while starving. In their typical black humor, the Zionists might say the children were put out of their misery. For weeks, the Zionists have blockaded all food and medical deliveries to Gaza. This is in clear violation of the ceasefire agreement that went into effect on January 19th, as well as international humanitarian law. But the Zionists have violated it from day one. The Zionists carried these murderous attacks because they can and because the United States supports them. Donald Trump has green-lighted the Zionist resumption of genocide of the Palestinians in Gaza. What accounts for Trump's subservience to the Zionists needs to be considered, but first let us continue with the Zionist regime's crimes. They have rightly evoked almost universal condemnation and loathing for their murderous policy. They are carrying out the strikes using U.S.-supplied warplanes and bombs. The few partially functioning hospitals in Gaza have been overwhelmed by the number of casualties. On March 21st, the Zionists bombed and destroyed the only cancer hospital, the Palestine Turkish Hospital in Gaza. With the exception of the United States, whose spokesperson said Washington had approved Israeli regime strikes, there was condemnation of the Zionist genocidal attacks from almost all quarters, even if some of these were quite hypocritical, such as the European Union. Doctors Without Borders expressed outrage at the latest bout of Israeli barbarism against defenseless Palestinian civilians. Claire Nicollet, MSF head of emergency, said in a statement posted on X, "We are appalled and outraged by these new unacceptable massacres of civilians. Far from showing any contrition, the indicted war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu said the assault will expand beyond airstrikes. He followed this up by sending Israeli occupation forces into northern Gaza and reoccupied Wadi Gaza, as known as Netzarim Corridor, that divides North Gaza from the south. The Zionist occupation forces had partially withdrawn from Wadi Gaza as part of the ceasefire agreement of January 15, 2025 that finally went into effect on January 19th. True to their duplicitous nature, the Zionists have constantly violated its terms. With the resumption of attacks on Gaza, killing innocent Palestinian women and children, and relaunching the ground invasion, the Zionists have once again proved that they do not abide by any agreement. They are habitual liars and serial killers." humanitarian food deliveries to Gaza were blocked, again in clear violation of the first phase of the agreement, exacerbating an already critical food situation. This was followed by cutting off electricity to Gaza, whose infrastructure has been completely destroyed during 15 months of relentless Israeli regime bombings. The January agreement also stipulated that Israel will allow tents as temporary shelter for the traumatized people until the enclave is rebuilt. True to their non-compliance and duplicitous nature, they have allowed only a small number of tents into Gaza. The reconstruction of Gaza remains an elusive dream. The U.S. Zionist plan is to ethnically cleanse the tiny strip of its 2 million inhabitants so that Trump and his equally greedy son-in-law, Jared Kushner, can build their Riviera of the Middle East on the Gaza beachfront. For Netanyahu, an ethnically cleansed enclave will mean that illegal Zionist squatters can move in there and steal even this small patch of Palestinian land. Trump's demonic plan calls for pushing the Palestinians into Egypt and Jordan. Rulers in both countries have categorically rejected the idea. They seek the risk of an influx of such a large number of Palestinians, inspired by the Islamic spirit of resistance, into their countries. They fear the Palestinians might radicalize their already angry populations and overthrow these regimes. Trump has also floated other ideas, equally bizarre, about throwing the Palestinians out of Gaza and dumping them in East Africa, Somalia, for instance, or even pushing them into Syria. There is, of course, a much simpler solution to this ongoing problem that erupted with the illegal intrusion of Zionist thieves and bandits from Europe and North America into Palestine. They should return to the countries from which they came: Poland, Romania, Ukraine, Hungary, Serbia, Russia, and North America, the United States and Canada. These racists and bigots do not belong in the Holy Land of Palestine that has been drenched in the blood of innocent Palestinian people since the arrival of these mass murderers in 1947 to 1948. Let us consider why Trump is so beholden to the pro-Israel lobby. It is not merely because Kushner is Jewish or that his daughter Ivanka has also converted to Judaism. Religion has little relevance for Trump. He is driven by greed, a trait he shares with most Americans, and he is extremely narcissist. These, however, do not fully explain his subservience to the Zionists. There are several other possible reasons. First, Jewish donors to his election campaign are in the forefront. Miriam Adelson and her late husband, Sheldon Adelson, have contributed massive amounts for the specific purpose of getting Trump to fulfill their demands regarding Israel. Miriam Adelson's $100 million contribution to Trump's campaign was made on the condition that, if elected, the Orange Man will allow Israel's annexation of the illegally occupied West Bank. The Adelson's donations, actually bribes, made to Trump's campaign in 2016 were to get him to recognize Al-Quds as the capital of Israel and to relocate the U.S. embassy there. Trump complied. For the massive contributions to his campaign, Trump awarded Miriam Adelson a Presidential Medal of Freedom in December 2018. In fairness to the Adelsons, they have donated large sums to other right-wing politicians as well. Politicians they supported and had virtually in his pocket included George W. Bush, John McCain, Newt Gingrich, Mitt Romney, and even the certified crook Rudy Giuliani. Over the course of the 2020 election cycle alone, Adelson gave more than $420 million to conservative candidates and political groups. Greg Palast helpfully tells us in his 2016 book, America as the Best Democracy Money Can Buy, A Tale of Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. The other, more plausible explanation is that Trump had close ties to the pedophile and Mossad agent Jeffrey Epstein. It is widely believed that Epstein made videos of Trump having relationship with minors and gave these to Israeli intelligence for blackmail purposes. Habitual blackmailers, the Zionists, may have threatened to release these videos and ruin his presidency if he does not comply with their demands. Even in a sex-plagued society like the United States of America, certain details may prove embarrassing even for a dirty old orange man. The price is being paid by hapless Palestinians.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. The Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, known as the JCPOA, was signed in July of 2015 by Iran, United States, and several other countries. As per the Iran nuclear deal, Tehran agreed to cut back on parts of its nuclear program, and the U.S. agreed to remove sanctions on Iran. However, in May of 2018, Donald Trump, during his first presidency term, announced the U.S.'s withdrawal from the JCPOA. Now, 7 years later, the same man who left the deal wants to talk to Iran again. Indirect talks between the two sides are scheduled to take place in Oman on Saturday. What can we expect?
Iran has reaffirmed its stance that negotiations with Washington will proceed only through indirect channels, ruling out any direct talks.
The negotiations will be held next Saturday in Oman. The talks will be indirect. We do not accept any way other than indirect talks.
Araghchi says the U.S. trying to impose its will through pressure and coercion is not cold negotiation, but rather an act of dictation. He emphasized that Tehran views indirect channels as a better means of ensuring effective and fruitful negotiations. The minister noted that if the other party demonstrates genuine will, an agreement will be in reach. The comments were made after Donald Trump claimed that Tehran and Washington would hold direct talks on Iran's nuclear program.
We're dealing with them directly. You know, a lot of people say, oh, maybe you're going through surrogates or you're not dealing directly, you're dealing through other countries. No, we're dealing with them directly.
Moscow has expressed support and emphasized that such discussions could help de-escalate tensions. The recent developments also earned a welcome from China that called on the U.S. to demonstrate political sincerity.
As the country that unilaterally withdrew from the comprehensive agreement on the Iran nuclear issue and caused the current situation, the U.S. should demonstrate political sincerity, uphold the spirit of mutual respect, participate in dialogue and consultation, and at the same time stop its wrong practice of threats of force and exerting maximum pressure.
As noted by China, U.S. actions, including Trump's withdrawal from the 2015 nuclear deal, have caused mistrust, Trump has threatened Iran with bombing its nuclear facilities, but many observers say the U.S. president does not want to accept the realities on the ground and achieve peace.
Trump has shown that, you know, he's unpredictable, he's not trustworthy, he's not diplomatic, and he is really have got no willingness to sort of look at the reality and move forward in a way that it will be interest of all parties.
Iran has been actively cooperating with the IAEA without leaving the negotiating table. Now the ball is in the U.S. court again. Before anything, Washington needs to build trust given its past performance.
I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Saab Shath, author and commentator out of Belfast. And Syed Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Well, thank you both for being with us. I'd like to start off in Belfast. And Saab, what are your thoughts about these renewed talks on Iran's nuclear program with the U.S.?
It's obvious the deal, the one who collapsed it unilaterally was and withdrew the United States of America, was Trump. With one tweet, he's disrespected the world powers who worked over 5 years, even more, to reach the JCPOA. After withdrawing, Trump reapplied the sanctions and what he said at the time, the maximum pressures. He said any agreement with Iran would have to limit its conventional weapons. He extended the demands, he wants the Iranian arsenal to be open for American inspections. And all of that is, that's away from the nuclear program. Iran, even after all of that, committed to the agreement for 1 year. It took Iran 1 year after the 1918 to start gradually suspending its commitment. But if we look what the Israeli and the Americans, because this is Netanyahu's ideas were behind Trump, they want the Libya model of negotiation. We know what happened in Libya. They even this cruise, they took them away with them when they dismantled Libya's nuclear program. Iran refused the demands Trump put in his letters. And as leaked, we know there is four demands in there. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Mr. Khamenei, rejected the idea of direct negotiation with the U.S. Second, he rejected the U.S. demand to dismantling Iranian nuclear facilities and stop all the uranium enrichment work above 3%. That's one of the demands. And to hand over, the Americans asked, 276 kilograms of 60% enriched uranium. Three, the cancellation and dismantling of the ballistic cruise and hypersonic missile system. And the last one, they demanded Iran to control the Houthi movement in Yemen to allow the America not to stop their attacks in the American Navy, aircraft carriers in the Red Sea and the Arabian Sea, and to allow normal navigation in the of all ships, especially the military one, and specifically the Israeli ships. Mm-hmm. This is Trump then threatened to bomb Iran if they don't cut a deal with it.
Okay, all right. Syed Mohsen, your thoughts. I mean, what would you say is the ultimate goal of Washington for wanting these talks with Iran at this time?
Well, it's their desire that Iran voluntarily capitulates. Basically, what they're asking for with these four demands which Brother Saab has outlined, it's quite clear it's not a negotiation. This is not a negotiation that America wants. They want a surrender. They want the Iranians to essentially open up their entire military arsenal to the Americans kind of access. They want to essentially make Iran renege on its sovereignty. The Iranians might as well say that we're going to go back on the Islamic Revolution altogether. They might as well hand over Tehran and the governance of Tehran to the US or even Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, it would be a major act of folly and foolishness for any nation to literally say we are handing over our defense and our entire security to the very nation which has bases dotted around all around the Islamic Republic of Iran with weapons, could even be nuclear weapons, ballistic weapons for sure, which are all pointed at Iran. That's whether you look at Iraq or you turn to the northern areas of Kurdistan, etc. Iran is surrounded. It's the fifth fleet of America, which is in the Persian Gulf. If the Iranian fleet was parked in Mexico or down in Florida, I wonder how the Americans would really react. So there's no parity. There's no. It's a ridiculous and absolutely pathetic effort on the part of Donald Trump to look like he's actually offering negotiations. He's not. He's offering a complete unequivocal surrender of Iranian sovereignty.
Well, Saad, how can Iran trust the United States when it never adhered to its part of the original agreement, when it was part of it, and then decided to basically make that deal null and void?
You see, the way the right wing in the American administration, which is today they are in control, or let me allow me to say the fascists, they say Trump didn't sign the JCPOA, and then Obama himself at the time of the signature didn't put it through to the Congress to affirm the deal. So the American president signature, the chief commander of the United States of America, is not enough for international agreement. We witnessed what his Trump, when he came to power in the first round in 2018, he started pulling the United States of America from lots of agreements, one of them the Paris Protocol on global warming and others. And all of that is just to show the United States of America only serve its own interests. So today, even with the tariffs he put internationally, shows the United States of America will wreak havoc in the international arena as long as you negotiate with the United States of America. So the United States of America needs someone to stand firm. In the other's hand, what is the Iranian demands from even any negotiation? We know the Iranian leadership has never surrendered to intimidation in its history. It's have moved forward after the 1 year of the canceling of the agreement. It moved forward toward increasing enrichment rates and stood by its allies in Yemen, in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Iraq. Iran is asking for more extensive sanction relief today than what Obama provided himself. This is one of the major points the Iranian put at the table. It's not just what Obama did, more, because Iran today in a more advanced position. Iran wants also recognition. Its nuclear program includes the rights to some level of enrichment and to use its centrifuges that they built since 2018. Iran is interested in removing all the unfair, illegal sanctions they were put on the Iranian economy, and they devastated a lot parts of the Iranian societies, these economical sanctions. So Iran today demands assurances that it would be able to access the SWIFT money transfer, which is all the international community uses, apart from the ones United States of America decided to put a noose and tighten it on them, like Russia or Venezuela, and ask as well the Western powers with the United States of America to remove their veto on international investment funds and companies who want to invest in Iran. We heard today the statement from the Chinese. China is a major, major player in the international community when they said the United States of America have to stop its strong practice of using force to extract, to exert extreme pressure on Iran.
Well, Saad Mohsen, do you consider it significant that Trump announced that renewed talks with Iran would take place while Netanyahu was with him at the White House?
Well, they are birds of a feather. There's always this debate of whether it's Israel that's controlling America or America is controlling Israel. I don't think there's any distinction, is there, really? They are one and the same entity. They're an extension of one another. They're both part of the same imperialist agenda. They're part of they're tied to the hip on every level in terms of policy in West Asia. So it comes as no surprise that Trump makes that statement with Netanyahu, because he's obviously showing Iran that he's in full alliance with Benjamin Netanyahu. He's totally in line with his genocidal acts in that region, and he stands solidly with him in terms of ethnic cleansing. He totally supports his apartheid system. He supports Jewish supremacy. He's saying by that statement that he will stand by the oppression that Israel meets out largely with America's full backing, and he'll continue to do so. And that's also sending a message to the Islamic Republic of Iran that we will oppose every aspect of the Islamic Revolution's commitment to standing up for the oppressed, because of course that means Yemen. The indication is for the oppressed in Yemen who have lent on Iran for its moral and other support, the oppressed in Iraq who were murdered and mutilated by Saddam Hussein, who Iran stood by through thick and thin, even when the Americans unleashed ISIS in that region. He's also saying we're going to continue to block Iran out of the support of Hezbollah if they can. They won't let them support the Lebanese people in their fight for continued sovereignty. So by doing it with Benjamin Netanyahu, Trump is clearly aligning himself with every immoral, every illegal action that Israel takes on, and America is therefore fully culpable. And it's also telling the Iranians, look, we're not serious about negotiation. How can Iran take America seriously in negotiations about the region, about Iran's role in the region, if it's openly saying, I'm actually with Israel, which is the sworn, deadly, if you like, enemy in the region of Iran, with its own 400 nuclear weapons pointing, you see, at Iran? It's just another way of Trump saying, I'm not really serious about negotiations.
Hmm. What's up? I mean, with the 18-month, the latest U.S.-Israeli genocide that has taken place now in Gaza, and obviously with what Syed Mohsen has said and what we all know about Washington and not really respecting international law, which is quite obvious with this genocide. So if an entity does not respect international law, can there be an effective international agreement made with it that it would keep its word? I mean, your assessment of that?
It's very as Kissinger said, who's the real, as they call it, the real style politician. If you are a friend of an enemy of the United States of America, that is dangerous. But if you are a friend, that is fatal. So United States of America, as we are witnessing, doesn't respect any international player, any international forum, any international law, anything. And the United States of America is openly supplying, as my colleague Masoud said, genocide and participating in genocide in Palestine. And from history, we learned once you are negotiating with the United States of America over anything, let's deal with the nuclear programs. Iraq in 1981, they destroyed it. Iraq after that invaded 91 because of Kuwait, 2003 because of lies about weapons of mass destruction. Today, Iraq is a devastated state. After that is Syria. Syria in 2007 being destroyed. There is a side, they said, a nuclear reactor in there. And suddenly Syria, we see today, it's in the Kfiri hands. Libya, once it handed its own a nuclear reactor to the United States of America through Tony Blair at the time, and it's dismantled. We can see what's happened in Libya. The only example stand who defied the United States of America was the North Korean, and it's have its own bomb in there, and nobody would dare come north beside North Korea because it's capable of defending itself. The United States of America, after the Islamic Revolution of Iran, In 1979, the Islamic Revolution have a global impact, not just local, and it changed the dynamics of geopolitics in the region. And they want today the United States of America, through the pathway of negotiation and that and sanction, to reach to the neck of the leadership of the revolution and impose regime change so it can loot the resources of Iran. We know Iran, apart from oil and gas, have the rare minerals in Iran which they need in the latest technologies on weaponry and telecommunication systems. So the danger of the path to negotiation without security and guarantees, because who's going to provide that security and guarantees once you start handing over your weaponry and defense? You will become a victim. You will become easy to be swallowed by the Zionist entity before even the Western allies.
Well, said Mohsen, Iran has said that negotiations can only take place indirectly, and force and threats must not be used, according to the foreign minister, and there must be mutual respect. Your thoughts? I mean, do you see Washington considering any other entity being on equal footing with it, or how do you see it?
Well, the indication comes from, first of all, the comment that Saad said earlier, that they don't respect their own friends, do they, or their allies? Because you can see what they're doing with the tariffs and the way Europe has been thrown into turmoil by Trump's reneging on any kind of formal economic pacts with Europe, essentially. So if America can't be trusted by those Zionist-run governments in the West, how on earth can anybody who's totally the most anti-Zionist establishment in the world, i.e. Islamic Republic of Iran, how can they really be expected to trust Donald Trump? I mean, has Donald Trump shown any goodwill? Has he loosened the sanctions at all? Has he released any funds, etc., that might be helpful to Iran? Has he told the World Bank to stop trying to economically terrorize the Iranian people? Has he made any concessions in terms of U.S. bases in the region? Has he withdrawn any of those? Has he stopped funding and financing ISIS on the borders of the Islamic Republic of Iran? Has he told Israel, Israel's attack dogs in Azerbaijan or over in northern Kurdistan, etc.? Have they stopped? Have they dismantled Al-Jundullah or any of the terrorist organizations which blow up places in Tehran? For that matter, has he stopped the psyops, the black ops that go on, you know, the regime change operations within Iran, trying to get people who are basically anti-Islamic revolution to overthrow the Islamic government? No, he's not done any of that. In fact, he's continued financing and funding those. I mean, today we know that whilst he's trying to look for places for cuts for ordinary people in America on all their ordinary services, he's just sanctioned $1 trillion in funding for the Pentagon, which does nothing for Americans in America in terms of its internal stability, but rather it does everything it can to destabilize Iran and any force which is there for the justice of the people of the world. And that's what he's in the business of. He is no less of a tyrant than Biden, because he doesn't call the shots. Behind him, there is an infrastructure which is in place, largely Zionist, largely moneylender mafia, and they dictate what America's policies will be. And their policies are that they want Iran to bend the knee, to give up all of its sovereignty, and then they'll do to it exactly what they did to Assad, because Assad started letting the US, the UAE and the Saudis and all the American puppets come in, and you see within a matter of months, Assad is gone. You saw that with Gaddafi, the same thing. He dropped his guard, let them all in, and before you knew it, NATO and America had dismantled him. This is the story time and time again. So the Islamic Republic of Iran knows this, and that's why they need to see evidence. And Congress, for instance, has never sanctioned any deals and negotiations with Iran. And what makes Iran think that if Donald Trump comes and does a deal with Iran today, gets them to do all this, this kind of suicidal, debunking of their whole defense mechanism and their security, what tells them that Donald Trump won't just renege on all those deals? Because Congress, what, certainly aren't there, they're not going to stop anybody. And so I don't think there's any trust whatsoever anybody can have in the foreseeable future.
All right. Well, Saeb, your thoughts. I mean, how likely is it that an agreement could be reached which could benefit Iran?
See, when you see in top of organization like the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, the director general of it, and then he in March, he raises his concern over the Iran enrichment of uranium. You would know this organization always, the heads of it, they have to have the blessing of the United States of America and the Western allies, and they be used just to now what at the hands of the International Atomic Energy Agency when it's concerned like that. We know this is, it means the whole issue have to go to the General Security Council, because that's they're plus Germany who took the decision on the Iranian nuclear program. And then once they don't disagree over that, which definitely they won't agree, because China and Russia will not agree with the Americans over that, then automatically the snapback mechanism gonna be released. And that means plus the sanctions and the maximum pressures Trump is putting, that to stagnate further the Iranian economy. But the leadership of Iran, they managed all along of these years to create routes of a trade with different blocs like India, like China, like Russia, and like that, which is a created mechanism it can cope with the Western sanctions. So the best way is to stay away from negotiation with the United States of America, especially without guarantors. I don't know how you're going to bring guarantors who can make the American adhere to anything, because they prove themselves they cannot adhere to any international standard whatsoever. Okay. And they are thugs after only protecting the United States of America. So Iran have to find a way to protect itself more seriously.
And on that note, I wish we could continue this discussion, but we're out of time. Saeb Sheth, author and commentator out of Belfast, Saeb Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London. Thank you both. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions. And questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan? La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs with me, Atta, the host of this program. Sheikh Rouhani from the Islamic House of Qom is the special guest speaker for today's discussion. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
All right, Sheikh. Some people might say that we believe only in God and in God only.
Yeah.
And in no Sharia system or Islamic laws, or it's better to say any type of religious framework or religious laws. In fact, we are not obliged to do the Islamic obligations or any type of religious obligations, rites and rituals, this manasik, okay? So only believing in God is enough for us as a believer. Is such a belief accepted by the religion of Islam or not?
Of course not.
Mm-hmm.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The answer is absolutely negative here. Because if someone claims that he believe in God, he automatically confirms that the God with his attributes, because God is not an entity or an existent without any attribute. Then when it comes to the attributes of God, God is the provider. God is the sustainer. God is the creator.
Mm-hmm.
God is the owner. God is, let's say, the protector. God is the ruler. Then this is God. When God is there, he is ruling over the universe, and he created us, and he provided us with the things that we need. So he is the owner of each and everything that he created, and he is creating every moment. So that's why we cannot say that we believe in God, but not in his ownership, not in his being sustainer, not in his being provider, not in his being, let's say, owner, a ruler of this, over this universe. It is like this, that you work in a company, in a factory, and factory provides you with salary, with, for example, insurance, with lots of, let's say, things you need. And then you would say that I don't care about the rulings or the laws or the rules that we have in this company.
That's right.
I come to this company whenever I want. I leave the company whenever I wish. I work in a company in what way I wish. And no one should, for example, tell me anything. There should not be any order, any law, any kind of legal system. And that, of course, that makes no sense. It is a foolish kind of idea that you... for example, you say that I'm living in this country, but I don't care about the laws and regulations. While this country provide you with sustenance, provide you with security,
it would be a blanket jungle, yes. Sheikh.
Yeah. So that's why. How can you say that I don't care about the regulations? I don't care about the legal system of the country. The whole world is like a country.
Yes. The main reason is that they say that the law of God or the religion. We can say something related and attributed to God only, and only God.
Yeah, if God
and
is
not,
the
for
owner.
Instance, the prophets, or for example, something like that, the religions.
Yeah, of course, when you live in this universe,
yes,
you are provided with lots of things.
Mm-hmm.
Then you shouldn't ask yourself that, who provided me with these things?
Okay.
Even if there were no any prophet, no any revelation, no any wahi, no any religion, wouldn't you, as a human, ask yourself that, okay, what is my responsibility here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
The one who is providing me with all these things, the one who is giving me all these chances in my life, all
right.
Yeah? Then I'm making use of all these things in this world. Don't I have any responsibility? Yeah? Why am I here, at least? Why am I here? Who brought me into this world? Because I myself did not come to this world. It's absolutely... let's say, explicit, then I will be taken away from this world one day. The question is that, okay, why am I here? What am I doing here? Where am I going from here? Mm-hmm. Yeah, these are the questions that without any religion, without any prophet, and an intelligent creator, an intelligent creature like man,
yes,
he would ask, and she would ask himself or herself that, okay, who am I here? Why am I here? What should I do here? I must have some duties. I must have some responsibilities. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The religions came to us to inform us of some of the duties and responsibilities that we have in this universe.
Very good.
You know? And this is not something for the benefit of God, because God is needless. God is self-sufficient. He does not need to us.
All right.
What we do in this world, what we perform in this universe, they are all for the benefit of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Very good.
Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gave us the chance to live here. Otherwise, we could not bring ourselves into life, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So the life itself, for example, we are completely dependent on oxygen. One should ask himself that this oxygen that I'm provided with, did I myself create this oxygen?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were prepared beforehand. When I was born, oxygen was available. Water was available. Yeah, sun and moon and galaxies and planet, Earth, whatever. They are all were available for me. And everything was prepared fully for me. Then the question is that, okay, what should I do now?
Okay.
What is my duty?